Welcome to the RA Podcast, the official Retro Achievements Podcast. I'm your host, Shootsy, and today, you guys, we are joined by two very special guests. First off, we have returning back for another guest spot on the podcast. Let's give a warm welcome for Malou.
Okay. Hi, everyone. I'm super excited for this episode and happy for the opportunity to be talking with a living legend of the Retro Achievements project.
Yeah, thank you so much for returning back to join us for this very special episode we have for our listeners today. Today, we also have, of course, another very special guest, our guest of honor. Please, everybody, give a warm welcome to Liridel.
Hello, everyone. Thanks, Malou, for your kind words, and I'm happy to be here.
Awesome, awesome. Thank you so much for joining us again, both of you, for making the time. I know we're all in, we're all in very different time zones, so it was definitely... an effort on all of our parts to get this together. So, Liridel, myself and Malou have taken some time to put together some questions for you. So if you're ready, we'll dive right into things. So one of the things we always like to learn about our guests is how they got started into gaming and into retro achievements, which we'll talk about plenty today, of course, as well. So tell us a little bit about how you got started and involved in video games in your gamer life.
Okay, sure. So when I was a child, actually, I used to spend my holidays in my cousin's. And one of his neighbors got a Atari 2600. And I was instantly hooked. So when I went back home, I asked my parents for a Atari VCS, and I got one for Christmas, and then I started my gamer life. As for the retro achievements, I was working in the Libre Retro project, and I think it was Radius that showed me the retro achievements website, and I thought that, whoa, that's a very cool idea. And I knew that I just had to make the two work together, RetroArch and Retro Achievements.
Well, that's an amazing, interesting background that you started so early on the Atari. I actually have enjoyed a lot of the Atari games on Retro Achievements in modern times. And, even though games were so simple back then, it's kind of amazing the evolution of games over time and how complex they've become, yet even some of the simple games from back in the day we're still able to enjoy all as adults. Tell us a little bit more about your favorite game and why it is your favorite game.
Okay, so my favorite game has to be Doom. I've played it so many times. I mean, I when I look at it for the first time, I was like, whoa. So this is so realistic. I know it isn't, but it was back then, right? After like Wolf 3D or Rise of the Triad, Doom was a step up in terms of realism. And I was hooked by it. I played it so many times. So yeah, it's my favorite game.
Gotcha, gotcha. Yeah, and I always enjoyed Doom a bit growing up. Always liked some of the Doom clones or similar games to Doom, like Hexen, for example, yeah, is one of my favorite games. That's such a fantastic game, and it's got great replay value as well, because you can play as like three different classes. It's kind of got like a medieval vibe to it, but it runs on that Doom engine. What is your favorite console and why?
It's the Atari 2600. Because it was my first console. But I also have the PS3 in a special place in my heart, because it's the console that was current when I entered the game industry.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, because I think for me too, as well, you know, the Game Boy was my first, the Game Boy and like early PCs, like we had a Windows 3.1 growing up. And the Game Boy is my first love, as many of our listeners know, is my first console or first handheld, I guess, mm-hmm. but first system, you could say. And it's amazing that attachment that we have to something when it's just, you can remember not everything about your childhood, but I can remember a lot about my childhood and memories associated with the Game Boy. So you talked a little bit about kind of how you got involved in the Retro Achievements Project, how you discovered it. It sounded like you were saying that you were in contact with somebody else and then they showed you it, and then you knew that this was instantly something that you wanted to kind of jump on. Is that what you were saying?
Yes, correct.
Gotcha. Okay. Okay. Well, I have more questions for you down the road, but for now, what I'll do is I'll kick things over to Malou. He's going to dive a little bit more into your background. So Malou, if you want to kick that off.
Okay. I hope we have in our audience some people who enjoy programming, because we are going to enter in a nerdish talking.
Oh my God.
Well, okay, let's go. The first thing I'd like to ask you is about your background as a programmer. How have you started playing with code?
Okay, so as I said, I got my Atari VCS console when I was a kid. But at the same time, I discovered in the stores, I used to go through a Sears store when going back home from school. And I started seeing those weird machines that they had like a typewriter keyboard on them, but they were also connected to the television. And and I saw them, and I started to watch people playing with those things, and I saw that they were actually instructing that thing to do stuff that appeared on the television. So I thought, whoa, I could use that to write my own games. And then I asked my parents actually to switch presents. I asked them to switch from the Atari VCS to a ZX81. It was a pirate clone, a Brazilian pirate clone. But it was a ZX81 compatible clone. And they said no. So I said, okay, I'm going to buy it with my own money. So my mother helped me buy the computer. And I got them two at that Christmas. And then I started reading the manual and learning BASIC. And it's very quick, actually, because you realize that BASIC, it's very, very, it's too slow to write games with it in the ZX81. So I started learning machine code, Z80 machine code, and the rest of history.
Okay. It's interesting you mentioned you were planning to write your... create your own games, and I was a kid more an easier kid to be amazed, because I became amazed about the opportunity to write my own name on the television screen.
Right? Yeah, the first problem, the first program.
Yeah. Well, and when and how did you started to get involved with emulation projects?
It was when I joined the Liberator project. I had a retired Wii at home, and I wanted to play some classics with my kids, like Super Mario. And I thought, well, there must be some Super Nintendo emulator for the Wii. So I started looking, and I found RetroArch. I installed RetroArch on the Wii, but I was missing some emulators like the ZX Spectrum and the ZX81. So I ported the Fuse emulator to the Liberator API, and that's how I got involved with the project. After that, I also ported the 81 ZX81 emulator for the Liberator API. And I also wrote a original core, which is the Game & Watch core, which runs simulators for those games. It's not emulation. Those are simulations. And I also, as I already said, I also integrated RetroArch with the Retro Achievements services and provided achievements for a wider audience, which I am very proud of. And yeah, I think that's all my involvement with Blue Retro and emulation.
Yeah, yeah. Nice, nice. And well, you are proud, and we are also very grateful for you for being able to do it. And there is actually a fun fact I'd like to share with our listeners. Not sure if you remember when we were working on the Chivo support on RetroArch, we spent a few weeks exchanging messages. And at some point, you said something like, sorry, dude, I'm going to be inactive for a few days because I'm moving from Rio to Lisbon. And then I said, wait a minute, are you Brazilian? We could be using Portuguese all this time.
And also, since you mentioned it, it's also thanks to you that I actually finished the work with the integration, because I wasn't working on it anymore. And then you started helping with some crashes and some issues that were happening. And then I started working on the integration again. So, yeah, you have an important part on that.
Yeah, it's a curious coincidence. I was very active on the RetroPie scene at that time, and I would like to, as a retro gamer, I think every retro gamer, when they know retro achievements for the first time, they became amazed. Wow, such an awesome thing. Mm-hmm. And it was what happened to me when I was playing with the RetroPie. And that's how I started to trying to find you. And fortunately, we achieved that.
Yeah.
It's an achievement. Oh, okay. Next question I have for you is, how did you come up with the idea to start the RE Lib Retro?
Well, we had so many systems already in RetroArch, so many Lib Retro cores already working. And I thought, well, it would be very, very cool if we could use those cores to both create achievements and earn them in a kind of official retro achievements emulator. So my first try was I started programming a LibRetro frontend, which would be able to run, to load and run those LibRetro cores, and would have all the tooling necessary to allow people to write to create achievements for those cores. But I was trying to do all the tooling from the ground up, from scratch. Yes, yeah. And you know, coding is easy. User experience is hard. So I scratched that project. It's still on GitHub, but I stopped working with it. And then I decided to just integrate the existing Retro Achievements tooling into a new front end, which was then RA Lib Retro.
Yeah, nice. Just as a reminder for our audience, in the episode where I was interviewed, I talk a bit about this. I explain for a non-programmer this thing about what is an API, LibRetro cores, and this kind of stuff. People could check that. Okay, let's go ahead. Another question is, what have you learned during your time working with RetroArch and RE Lib Retro, not limited to the technical stuff, maybe?
I think that...
I think you kind of mentioned the user interface was a big challenge.
But I think what I really learned is how to work in an open source project, because it's so different. Of course, it's different when you're doing something by yourself, right? But it's also very different from working for a company with your coworkers, because in a company things are much more settled. Everyone has their own responsibilities, and things are are very clear what we should be doing, what we should be working with. But that's not true in an open source project, because every single person working in a project is there for their own reasons, because they want to do a specific thing. And that's sometimes not what the project needs, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So I think that was the most important lesson from working with RetroArch and the RetroArchivists.
Yeah, nice. I'd like to share something I learned working on open source projects too, and think exactly related to what you said. When I joined something, some project, I tried to figure out where there is something lacking, then I have skills to contribute, but no one else is going for it. And I think it's a nice way. And very often it's about documentation. Programmers like to code, but well, keeping documentation up to date is kind of boring.
That's if you have some documentation, right? Because sometimes you don't have any documentation at all.
Yeah. I think you kind of talked about the next question. What were the biggest obstacles or challenges you faced while working on and designing RALib Retro?
So for the platform specific stuff, I used SDL, so I didn't have to worry with opening a window or bleeding stuff to the screen and caring about audio. SDL took care of all of that. And one thing that is a bit difficult, it's the LibRetro API. It's a very nice API, which abstracts many, many important things when you're writing an emulator. So you only have to care about the emulation aspect of your project. But when you work in a front-end, at the other side of that API, you start asking yourself, okay, so in what exactly order should I call those functions in the core? So what happens if I get it wrong? The core will crash, and then it's not really documented anywhere, because the documentation that exists is for people that are writing emulators, LibRetro cores, right? Not front ends.
Yeah.
So I had to experiment a bit with the API. How should I call the functions in the core? Excuse me. And so that was something I had to learn. And also another thing that wasn't really a challenge, because I've done that before a long time ago, but I didn't remember exactly how to do it, so it was a bit difficult to find the necessary information about that. Is because the LibRetro cores, each core has its own configuration options, right?
Yeah.
So how do you present that to the user? You have to create a dialogue for the user with those options. So it's not something that you can design up front, because it's dynamic. It depends on the core.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, because with the Win32 API, I don't know of any way that you can do it other than writing bytes, undocumented bytes, to memory, and then giving those bytes to the Win32 API, saying that okay, here's a dialogue for you. So yeah, that's another thing that I have to remember how to do.
All right, I think you currently is not actively working on RetroArch or in RALib Retro, but I'd like to ask if there is any feature you would like to see implemented on those front ends?
Okay, let me think a bit. New features.
Yeah, I remember we talked a bit about retro mods. would like to share that idea.
Yeah, it's not really my idea. It's a Radius idea. It's a very nice idea, actually, because it's a step up compared to achievements, because it would allow, for instance, you to completely modify a game using like save states or by patching the game using some kind of script, Lua or some other scripting language to drive something that is happening in the game, like spawn new enemies. So yeah, it's an idea that to have like challenges.
Yeah, like hacking the game, but not needing to patch the ROM beforehand, something like that.
Well, maybe sometimes patching the ROM. The idea is to allow the games to be modified in ways that are not possible with the with retro achievements. Retro achievements work just by looking at the memory of the emulated system, right? And looking for values to award the achievements to the player. This is something else. So you could, for instance, load a snapshot and have the player play that snapshot and, for example, beat the level boss. And when that happens, the mod would be able to load another snapshot and let the player fight another boss and so forth. Yeah. So it could be a boss fight speedrun
challenge.
Yeah. Like that. Yes. It could run a lowered ROM patch beforehand to change the game in some way, like adding the different music or different graphics. And like I said, spawn enemies at some specific situations. So yeah, it's a very, very interesting idea, which I used to write a kind of draft about how it could work, but then it stayed at the draft stage, unfortunately.
Another thing I'd like to ask you, I've been seeing you sharing some Raspberry Pi stuff on Twitter, things related to ZX Spectrum. Would you like to share what's that thing about?
Yeah, sure. So I was gifted a Raspberry Pi board some 2 years ago. And I think it's a very interesting little computer, right? Because it's so small and yet kind of powerful. And but what interested me the most is that I could run bare metal code in it. So for me, it was like having my ZX81 again.
Yeah.
Because you have full control over the computer, right?
Yeah, you don't need an operation system.
Yeah, you don't have to run an operating system, right? You can write your own code, copy it to the SD card, and then boot your code directly.
Yeah.
And it's so awesome because you can do all... You think you crash the CPU in many different ways. So so I started experimenting with bare metal code. I was able to write a little, let's say, kernel that could that could set up the CPU and show some graphics on the screen. And then I had a thought that why we could have an entire video console out of a Raspberry Pi board, right?
No need of Linux or an operating system.
No, we don't. Yeah. An operating system, we will slow things down.
Yeah, would be an overhead.
Yeah, yes. And for many, many different types of games, the Raspberry Pi is powerful enough to run them, right? And so I wanted to make that, let's call it a firmware that would be able to load those games to have a user interface, a video game a user interface where the user could browse the games and choose a game and play the game and go back and choose another game, just like we have in the modern video game consoles. So, of course, I thought about the Liberator API because we have a very active scene, scene now, nowadays, with many original and new games being launched for many different retro platforms. And I could use that to legally launch the project with an image that would embed all some of these games and allow the users to just copy the image to the SD card and have the games immediately available without having to download anything else. And so I thought about the Liberator API for that, right? It's just a matter of loading a core and loading a game, and emulated systems don't need, most of them don't need any graphics acceleration, which is an issue when you work with Raspberry Pi bare metal, because you don't have a graphics driver, an OpenGL driver, for instance. So you have to work in software. So yeah, that's what got me hooked to the Raspberry Pi.
Nice, nice.
About your specific question about the tweet about the ZX Spectrum, is because I was able to run a ZX Spectrum Liberator core bare metal in the Raspberry Pi.
Nice, nice. The an interesting thing about the Raspberry Pi is it's exactly the device that like brought me to emulation, like to being a contributor on the emulation scene. Before that, I was just a player, and the do it yourself ethos from the Raspberry Pi scene made me be a active contributor, and now I'm here contributing with the Retro Achievements Project.
Awesome.
Okay. Now, a big question I have in mind, since I knew you years ago, many great things you have created for our project and for emulation in general, things that are surely important parts of the history of the Retro Achievements. But do you even play retro games?
Okay. So, the answer is no, I don't.
Okay.
But not because I don't like them. I don't actually play anything other than with my kids.
Okay. Right? Because, just play with code.
That's my hobby. My hobby is coding. So after working, after spending time with my kids, we do we have martial arts classes together. We like to go out a lot, I and my wife. We like to watch movies. So I don't really have much free time in my hands. Mm-hmm. The little that I have, I like coding. And the games that I play are the games that I play with my kids.
Yeah, yeah, I can relate to that. Like, it's my gaming time. I'm use that to spend some time with the kids also.
Yeah, yeah, and it's lots of fun, right? Mm-hmm. I don't always got to play the games that I want, but it's a lot of fun.
Yeah,
play with them.
Nice. Before handing back the questions over Shutsi, I'd like to ask you if you have any advice for aspiring programmers that may be interested in emulation stuff, where they can start, which language or technology to focus on, or if you recommend some website, book, or whatever, a good resource to learn.
Okay, so,
I think the first thing is C, programming language.
No, not really.
No.
No, not really. So I think the best advice is it's to pick up a simple system to emulate, like a CHIP 8 it's very simple to emulate that system. It's a virtual system actually, right?
Mm-hmm.
But nonetheless, it's very well specified. So mm-hmm. you can get that specification and actually write
try to implement code
that emulates that system, that implements that system. So I'd start with something simple like that, like a mm-hmm. CHIPS8 emulator. And you got to, because that way you actually understand everything that is involved in emulation, right? You have to emulate the video, you have to emulate audio, you have to emulate input, and then you start seeing the value of APIs like the Liberator APIs, because mm-hmm. If you don't use an API like Liberator, you have to take care of everything your own, right? Like showing the frame buffers, the video, playing the audio, reading input. And it's not trivial. It's a lot of work to do that. So start with a simple system. The actual language is not very important.
Yeah, and it's interesting, as you said, CHIP8, I instantly, I saw a girl who implemented an emulator for CHIP8 in JavaScript. So yeah, the language is not really that important. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, of course, if you're going to write a CHIP8 emulator for the Liberator API, you'll have some limitations. Like mm-hmm. it will have to be a compiled language mm-hmm. that has the API.
People can learn the concepts independently.
Exactly. So yeah, that's my advice.
So a good resource would be the CHIP8 web page and specification.
Yeah, and maybe the Liberator API, or if you don't want to go down the Liberator route, something like SDL, which will save you lots of time.
Nice. Okay, Shutzi, can you handle the next question?
Of course, of course. And it is, I will just say before we do dive into the next set of questions, it is really fascinating to kind of hear the back and forth that you guys have, especially when you talk about Raspberry Pi, because that's how I actually got involved in retro achievements as well. As some of our audience knows that's been listening to the podcast for a while, 4 years ago, I just saw some videos of people. They were doing, they were making Raspberry Pi systems with, emulation station on the front end. And they were taking old Nintendo cartridges and then, just tossing a Raspberry Pi in there and doing all this stuff. And I kind of thought about that for a while, but then I ended up just ordering one and just, flashing it. And I got instantly hooked after that. And, here I am 4 years later. So obviously still hooked to this day. So it is really interesting. Yeah, it's very addicting. And again, I'm sure that our audience is deeply, deeply appreciative of you laying the framework, Liradel, so that we all can enjoy the website and the integrations that you've implemented and put so much hard work and dedication into. And, like you said, that's your passion, and that's something that you take very seriously and you put your best foot forward at. So it's always impressive to hear about people's accolades and something like that, especially because, I don't come from a programming background. I grew up with computers and things like that, but I've just always played games my whole life, and that's just kind of been my passion. And I work on the test side of things, which is probably not as interesting or as creative of a field. But again, I appreciate you kind of sharing some of those stories and getting us, our audience and us, up to speed about what you've gone through and what you've really done for the community, so they have a greater appreciation for that. And I could go on and on, but I want to dive a little bit into...
Interrupting a bit. We have the administration team of the Retro Achievement project, we have some numbers about the connections we receive, and kind of 80% of the connections we receive from players come from RetroArch. So nice. Liradel has a big responsibility for that. Currently we can, for those who don't know, in the old days of retro achievements, we could only enjoy the feature using Windows only emulators, and now we can play with RetroArch, which means a wide range of platforms like Android and handheld devices and Raspberry Pi and so on.
And the archivos was very important for that, right, to the library?
Yeah. I think I also mentioned this work in my interview on the previous episode. Yeah, that was a very, very important step towards to synchronize the work between RetroArch and the standalone emulators. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, RetroArch, because it is compatible on so many devices, like you said, it does have a much bigger availability now to a wider audience, which is really important so that everyone can enjoy retro achievements, not just Windows users, because a lot of people are on different systems, or they have a preference, or they just don't have the tech, right? Not everyone is a Windows user. So it is great that there has been so much effort towards integration, and like I said, Liradel, that's a huge credit to you and being able to do that over time and make it so that everyone has access to that. You're doing the Lord's work for a lot of people, so we appreciate it. So talking a little bit about some other things that you've worked on, you are credited as having worked on a number of modern titles, including Resistance 2, Resistance 3, Ratchet and Clank Future, A Crack in Time, Ratchet and Clank All for One, Ratchet and Clank Full Frontal Assault, Ratchet and Clank Into the Nexus, Fuse, and also Sunset Overdrive. That's a pretty long list of titles. Do you have a favorite title that you've worked on as part of your professional career?
Well, can I list two?
Of course.
So yeah, the first one has to be Resistance 2 because it's the first game that was launched with my name in the credits. And it was surreal to see my name in the credits on the TV when I finished the game. So yeah, it marks you. And the second one is Ratchet & Clank A Crack in Time. It was the first Ratchet & Clank title with my name in the credits. And I just love the franchise. I've played them all with my kids, especially the older one. I just adore the that platformer.
Gotcha. Yeah, and I'm actually a big fan of Ratchet and Clank as well. I still have my PS2, and I played a lot of the Ratchet and Clanks from the PS2 era, and they're just fun games.
Yeah.
There's just so much creativity in them, and just...
It's so beautiful. It's like playing a Pixar movie.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very true. They're great fun, though. I haven't played one in a while, admittedly, but I know there's a reason why I have three or four of them, because they were super fun games. And to speak a little bit to seeing your name in the credits, that is one of my aspirations eventually, to get to that point. Maybe on the testing side, I do contract testing work, and I don't work on titles, so that's maybe something in the future here, but that's always been a dream of mine as well, or one of my life goals. So I'm sure that it has a very surreal, effect on you when you see your name, bam, right there in the title credits. Mm-hmm. And it's a big motivation to continue the work that you do in the gaming industry. So, again, kind of putting things into perspective here, and what you're currently working on, what are some of the current projects that you're currently involved in?
My current projects, I have three current projects, actually. The first one is I'm working with a different Liberator frontend. I called it the hackable console. It's a Liberator front end, which is of course capable of loading Liberator cores, but which has an extension to the Liberator API, which is a debug extension. So my plan is to allow people to reverse engineer and debug games running with Liberator cores. So for instance, you should be able to load AZX Spectrum core and load the game and step through the code line by line. By code, I mean the assembly, right? It's not high level code, but the CPU instructions, and see the CPU state, like the registers and flags and everything, be able to watch the memory of the emulated system, the values changing in real time, and also with some tools integrated to discover some values inside the emulated RAM, just like the Retro Achievements tooling. So you could scan memory for a specific value or for some value that is always increasing, and that kind of stuff, to be able to reverse engineer a game. So that's one thing. I already have something working. I'm already able to step through machine code using AZX Spectrum core, but I still have to integrate the rest of the tooling for the reverse engineering part of the project. And also, that's just one core working. I would have to implement some other cores so that the system is actually useful, because otherwise it's just another ZX Spectrum debugger.
Gotcha. Okay. And I know that kind of doing a little bit of research on you prior to the show, you were also working in with AntStream. So I don't know a whole lot about that. Do you maybe want to talk to us a little bit about AntStream as well?
Yes, I do. But can I finish the projects?
Oh yeah, sorry. Because sorry, I didn't realize you had. I didn't. Yeah, my fault. I hadn't realized you hadn't finished them. So go ahead, please.
Yeah, no problem. My fault. So that was, excuse me, the hackable console. I'm also working in a new Game and Watch Liberator core. The author of the Game and Watch simulators have reworked the simulators to a new standard, like he calls it the standard 5, and so those don't really work in the current core, so I would have to add that support to the core. But I decided to create a core from the ground up, so I don't have to support the new standard and legacy standards, beginning from a clean state. And this new standard also has a new game that was coded by someone else, actually, which is the Popeye Nintendo widescreen Game & Watch. So I started, it's my current project. I'm actively working on it so that we can launch the score with all the updated games and with this new game, which is Popeye. That shouldn't take long, I believe. I mean, just 1 or 2 months of work. Let's see how it goes.
Nice.
And finally, the thing that I already talked about, which is the video game console on Raspberry Pi Bare Metal. I was able to run AZX Spectrum core recently using Bare Metal stuff. I used a very cool framework, Bare Metal framework, which is called Circle. So I'm deciding whether I'm going forward with that framework or with my own code. which will be much more work, but it's also much more fun. So yeah, that's for the project. Okay. So for Antstream, I knew Antstream on Twitter. It just appeared in my feed, and I thought, whoa, that's a very cool idea. And then I wrote them, and I was able to join the company. And so what's Antstream? Antstream is a platform where you can play retro games very easily, because all you have to do is to download the application, install it, and create your account. And then you instantly have access to all the library of games that we have, which is around 1,500 different games. So, it's very cool because you don't have to worry about downloading and configuring different emulators. You don't have to worry about downloading the games because we use streaming. So everything happens on the cloud. All the emulation configuration and the games are already set up in the cloud. So all you have to do is just choose the game and start playing right away. And another thing that it's very interesting is that we actually take time to reverse engineer those games and implement some different ways to play the game. So we call those challenges. And for instance, you can have a one life challenge for a game. How much points can you score with just one life? But we can have other different challenges, like for instance, a game that has a teleporter. How many times can you teleport in, say, 1 minute? And so we reverse engineer the games and we create those challenges. And we also have weekly tournaments using one of these challenges where everyone can compete for the best score. So it's very interesting. And also it's free. So, yeah.
Interesting. Sorry to interrupt, but it sounds like very similar to our leaderboards on retro achievements. Is that correct?
Yeah, yes, it is. Because one thing that we do for all games is to reverse engineer the score, the game score, and have them persisted in the system, mm-hmm. in the cloud. So you always have your score with your name in the leaderboard.
Interesting. Nice. Okay. So at a quick glance, Antstream might seem pretty similar to what we have in retro achievements. Can you explain to our audience a little bit more just about how they differ from each other a little bit?
Yes. We don't have achievements in the form that they exist in retro achievements. Like I said, it's just challenges for now. We do have plans to have achievements later down the road, but for now it's just challenges. How many points can you score with one life? How many points can you score under 5 minutes? And that kind of stuff. So that's one big difference. And the other, like I said, it's just already set up. So you just download, install, and play.
Right. That's kind of more... everything's just a lot more integrated so that the user doesn't have to go through the setup process, which I think for people that, are maybe a little bit less knowledgeable about, the emulation world and things like that, that might be also kind of something that they can enjoy. Although, most people, it's pretty easy for them to, get set up with an emulator and a ROM. Cause I guess it's, I say that because all of us have probably been doing for so long, we don't even really think about it, mm-hmm. but for somebody that's kind of just exploring, emulation and kind of learning about different things, it might be a really good option for them to check out and kind of see how they feel about it. I know that would be, I would definitely check something like that out just so I could have an idea of at least what it is. Cause I just like to tinker and mess with things and get involved in different services and kind of see, what I personally kind of like and dislike about it. So for those of our listeners or people that are listening, can you maybe give us a bit of information about how they can get involved with AntStream or how they would go about finding it?
Yeah, sure. Just visit antstream.com. It's ant, like the insect, and stream.com, antstream.com.
Okay, perfect. And we'll be sure to throw a link in the description as well so that our users can, or our listeners rather, can
sorry to interrupt.
Oh, go ahead. You're fine.
I think another difference is that AntStream users don't have to worry about the legal aspect of having the games, right?
Oh, yeah, that's correct. All our games are licensed. So, yeah. It's not pirating anything.
Okay, that's interesting as well. So, last few questions that I have here, and then I will kick it back over to Malou here in a little while. So, finding a balance between working in the gaming industry and enjoying games can be kind of a hard balance to strike. You know, you mentioned that your hobby is coding and you don't have a lot of time for games. You have a family, obviously, and that's a big commitment, spending time with them. And then also you have a professional career and you have projects and things like that going on. So do you ever struggle a little bit with that, or how do you find kind of that balance where you maybe do have time to do what you want to do?
Okay. I don't actively plan things beforehand to have a good balance. So there's work, right? It's from Monday to Friday, 8 hours a day. So that's already taken care of, right? That's the baseline. So after that, I have my fixed activities like sports with the kids, playing with them, spending time with my wife. And then I have a free time. Quote time. And I use that time to do the things that I like coding, like taking care of my personal coding projects. And that's it. That's the balance, if you call it.
Gotcha. No, I totally get it. I mean, obviously it sounds like a lot of your time is spoken for, but it sounds like you have a really good like you said, quote unquote balance, or you have your obligations in a good priority that works for you, might be a good way to put it.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you mentioned that you do like to watch movies and things like that. Do you have a favorite movie?
I do. It's Matrix.
Oh, nice one.
Gosh. Yeah.
That's a good choice.
It's a choice for many, many people that I know. But it was so mind-blowing. I watched it in the theaters.
Oh, wow. Okay, I got it.
Yeah, and I was, oh, my God.
Yeah, mind-blowing.
Yeah, it was mind-blowing.
1990.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely have kind of that feeling about a few movies. You know, when you watch it in theaters and then it turns into this insane, crazy franchise that I think they're making, you know, the Matrix for, and I guess we'll see how that is. But the original Matrix, I can imagine what it's like to be in the theater. Nobody has any kind of real idea about what it's about aside from trailers. You never really know if a movie's going to explode and take off if it doesn't have any precedent or any you know, prior movies, like if it's not a sequel. Mm-hmm. So when I remember, I must have been like, I don't know, maybe 13 or 14. And the first Saw movie came out and it was in theaters, and I went to go see it. Me and my friends like snuck into the movie theater because it was R and we weren't old enough to go see R movies. And just going to see it and walking out, and our minds were pretty blown. Like the first Saw, obviously the Saw franchise has kind of dilapidated maybe a bit. I know the later ones, the sequels are never usually as good as the originals because they have to keep coming up with stuff. But I remember going to see the first Saw movie and just walking out. And at the time, there had been movies like that here and there, I'm sure, but nothing quite like that particular movie. So it really does kind of always stick in my memory as that movie or one of the big movies of the time. Do you have a favorite kind of music that you listen to as well?
Yes, I do. I like rock in most of its variations. That's gotcha, what I hear all the time.
Any particular bands or just rock in general?
Rock in general, but I do like Iron Maiden, Megadeth. I also like the other not heavy metal bands. I actually like Elvis Presley, and I like more soft stuff like REM. And yeah, it's varied.
All the classics. I can't argue with that for sure. Yeah. So, if you could go back, Liridel, in time and give yourself any piece of advice. Let's say, for example, if you could go back 5 years from now and give yourself any piece of just personal, professional, or any kind of advice, what would you say that would be?
Can we make that 15 years?
We can do that. we can throw a time machine in there. Why not? Yeah.
All right.
Let's go for
it. All right. Thanks. I would
keep in mind your kids around you, right?
Sorry?
keep in mind your kid, your 16 years old kids around you.
Yeah. Sure. I don't want to change that. No way. Right. But professionally, I would go 15 years ago and I would have moved to California. Because I worked for Insomniac remotely from Brazil, from Rio, the whole 7 years and a half that I worked for Insomniac. So the original idea was to move to Burbank and work in the office, but because of many reasons, we decided to do the remote work. And it actually worked very well. And I stayed the whole time in remote, working remotely for them. But that's not actually good, right? I mean, I love being in an office. I think you learn so much more from your coworkers when you're in an office with a coworker sitting next to you. Right, and being able to participate in many more meetings than you usually do when you're working remotely, and I think that it would have an even greater impact in my career if I had moved to Burbank.
For sure. I mean, I 100% agree with you. You know, I've been at my job for about a year and a half, and I've always been somebody that kind of learns by doing. And when I first started my job, it was before COVID, and I hadn't been involved in game testing before. And I know that if I had started my job from home, I don't think there's any way I would have been able to do it. Yeah. You know, I learned so much from, in my experience at least, I found the best person on my team, and I watched them very, very closely.
Yeah.
So that's always been the big thing, is, you know, find the best person. I've always felt like in any setting you're in, is find the best person on the team, or the person that does the most output, and just watch them very, very closely and learn from them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and good advice.
I think that there is something to be said about that for sure. I couldn't agree with you more on, you know, needing to be in an office. And I do miss it a little bit. I mean, prior to, you know, after the COVID hit, you know, it was nice for a little while with work from home, but I'm not sure that I could do this for the rest of my life necessarily. There has to be some interaction.
There's a balance, right?
Before
the trade-off.
That's a trade-off. Before COVID, entering is based in London. So before the COVID, I used to go to London every other week. So it was 1 week there and 1 week working from home. And I think that was a nice balance, because I could work with my coworkers, sitting next to them and talking directly to them and watching them doing something. And then the other week I would stay home, and it's of course less tiring to work from home, right, than having to go to the office every day. So there's a balance.
Yeah, for sure. I couldn't agree with you more. And kind of talking about that balance, you know, you mentioned you're working Monday through Friday, you've got things going on with the kids, and then you've got your projects as well. What would you say, or can you maybe walk us through kind of an average day in the life of Liridel? What would that look like?
It's not much different than what I already said. It's like coffee break and then working from Monday to Friday, of course, and then working, and then depending on the weekday, I have the martial arts class with my kids. On Fridays, I usually watch a movie with my wife, Fridays and Saturdays. Also, during the weekends, I play with my kids a lot. And the rest of my time is just to be with my projects and coding a lot.
Right. No,
We,
that's, I mean,
yeah.
oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, sorry. Just to add that I and my wife, we love going out to restaurants, to bars, to visit friends. We're very, very social and active during the night. So we're feeling this whole pandemic a lot.
Yeah,
Because
it's been
the,
really tough.
yeah, it's all those lockdowns where we can't even go out anymore, right? It's very tough here in Lisbon right now. But yeah, we.
An interesting thing when you were talking about working with your colleagues, one of the things I miss the most is the happy hour after work,
Yeah.
inviting people to drink some beer and, well,
It's the
just chat.
very important aspect of working in an office. It's how you make bonds to people, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, I think COVID is that's I think that's one of the things that's hit everyone the hardest is just, I mean, I live in a state where the restrictions are very heavily enforced for being able to go out. So, you know, everything's still kind of on lockdown, and I guess we'll all see how the next few years play out with this. Hopefully things improve. It seems like you know, slowly and steadily things are returning to normal to some degree, depending on where you are in the world and what's going on. Do you have a favorite food or beverage that you like?
Food or beverage? Yes, yes and no. It's hard to find something that I don't like, that I don't eat. So yeah, there are many different dishes that I like. But if I was to elect one, just one, I'd say octopus with rice and broccoli.
I
Interesting
have a
choice.
related question. Do you miss Brazilian food
I
in
do,
Europe?
I do, I do, I do. I miss food from Minas Gerais with it's a Brazilian state. I lived there for 14 years, and they have awesome food, and it's difficult to find it here in Portugal. And so yeah, I miss Brazilian food a lot.
Yeah, I will admit that I'm a very simple guy when it comes to food. So I'm kind of one of those people that usually when they get that question, I just like pizza.
I love pizza.
maybe that's the American in me, but no, it's that's an interesting food choice that you mentioned there for your favorite. So last question, and then I'll kick things back over to Malou that I have for you is,
just a
do you
second,
have?
just a second. Sorry.
Oh, sorry.
For the beverage, it's
Heineken's.
no, it's not. It's caipirinha.
Oh yeah, caipirinha.
Caipirinha. It's a Brazilian drink made of cachaça and lemon and sugar and ice. I love it, but it's strong. So I used to also drink beer a lot. I like beer a lot. Yeah, but my preferred one is caipirinha.
Yeah, caipirinha with
Interesting.
feijoada is awesome.
Exactly.
That's
Yes.
like an alcoholic drink.
It is, yes. Cachaça is
Okay,
very
yeah,
strong. It's a
a strong one.
distilled
Like
drink.
you can't have a lot of caipirinha doses and
Oh,
keep standing.
maybe three.
yeah, we have some stuff like that though. We have like it's called an AMF, and it's like I don't know, it's like a shot of rum, shot of gin, couple shots. It's almost 3.5 shots or 2.5 shots in a drink like that. So one or two of those will put you put you on the floor pretty quickly. So we have some stuff like that up here as well. But
which part of US you were, Schutzi?
I live in the Pacific Northwest, so I live up in Washington State.
Okay.
Yeah, so pretty much by the coast, so we get a lot of rain, and that's what happens about 90% of the year.
Ouch.
And it's like dark and gloomy, so yeah, but I've lived here my whole life, so I've just kind of grown used to it. I haven't really, not much of a traveler, so yeah.
It's so sunny here in Lisbon.
Yeah, that's something that I think our state greatly needs. I mean, we rarely see the sun. We have the sun maybe a few months out of the year, and then the rest of it is just pretty much raining all the time. But if you're a native, then it's something that, you know, you kind of just get used to. And it's just very it's very, very steady weather. So if you're somebody that doesn't like the extremes of the hot and cold, then it's a perfect place to live. So do you have any personal routines that you follow to get in the mood for work, Liridel? Any anything that you do to get going or get jazzed up or get ready?
Oh, well, I'm always in a good mood. So what really counts for me is the motivation that comes from the challenge. So it has to challenge me, because when you're challenged, it means that you're learning from it. So when I'm not learning, it's a core. When I'm learning, when there's challenge, I'm on the mood, right? So of course, for personal project, that's always the case, because I got to choose my personal projects, right? But that's not the case for work. So I was very glad that I could move to the games industry, because there are some aspects of this industry that are not good. But on the other hand, you have a lot of innovation, of constant innovation. So you're always challenged. You're always learning in this industry, right? So as an example, now at Antstream, I got to reverse engineer games, right? So I never thought I'd use all that Z80 machine code that I learned 30 years ago. And here I am, right? Using that knowledge and also learning about some many other different CPUs from that time. And learning how all those games work, and it's awesome. So yeah, so to answer the question, it's about the challenge. That's how I get in the mood, by being challenged.
Yeah,
that's a good answer.
As a nerd, I can see it like a dream. You are hacking stuff and making it for a living.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I will say, you know, as you said, the games industry has a lot of room for innovation. Probably a little bit more on your side of things, because you're deeply involved in more of the creative process and the code aspect of things. And I will say I'm green with envy a little bit, because that's kind of somewhere I want to get to eventually. Maybe not necessarily code, but just being more involved in the creative process, because games are my passion. And that's kind of always the direction I've wanted to head in. And now I have a little bit of work experience under my belt in the games industry. So hopefully I can eventually turn that into something that I can call a career. At this point, I'm kind of still switching things up. I changed careers, you know, within the last couple of years. I worked in telemarketing for 5 years before I did this. Just wasn't really my thing. I was really good at it, but it just wasn't something that, you know, I was passionate about. I think if you work in an industry that you love and you love what you do, then I think that's really all that somebody could, I mean, you know, having a roof over your head, clothes on your back, and being able to afford food, all good things too, for sure.
Afford games. And
afford games too, obviously. But I think that's really all that, you know, you can ask for. Is that's one of the biggest dreams that people have, is to be able to work and do something that they love. So I can certainly relate to that. So I'll kick things back over to Malou for our final set of questions here before we wrap things up. So Malou, do you want to take it from here?
Okay. Actually, I had a couple of questions that I think we kind of addressed before. So I'm going to finish with my last one. And it's, what's one thing you haven't accomplished in life that and you were still aiming for? I mean, besides surviving the pandemics.
Okay, I still have to look at the Earth from orbit.
Pretty ambitious one.
Yes, I know. Not sure if I'll be able to do that, but yeah, I want to do that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love space.
Yeah.
I love space. I always did. So I always had. So yeah, looking at Earth from orbit must be mind blowing. Must be awesome.
You were one of those kids in the 80s excited about the Halley Comet.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I remember there was a lot of marketing about it.
Yes, there was. I actually had a telescope to watch Halley passing by, but no, it was just a tiny little dot in the sky.
Yeah. Yeah. It was awesome. I mean, born in the 70s and 80s, it was a nice time to be born.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, I think I'm done.
Yeah, I was going to ask, you guys are, just before we do wrap things up here, you guys are talking about Halley's Comet. That's the comet that only appears like once every 70-odd something years?
I think 80 years, yeah.
Wow. And you had an opportunity to see that, huh? Okay.
Yeah.
I think it was discovered recently, no?
Oh, was it? Oh, no. Oh, no.
Yeah, I think it was.
Oh.
Visible.
Well, I think...
Halley Comet.
It was visible again recently. I didn't know that.
Wow. Interesting. Okay. Well, I think that's all the questions.
My bad.
Oh. No worries. Yeah,
because I remember there was a lot of marketing on it in the 80s, at least.
It was.
Well,
yeah.
And now with the internet, I think it would be, it would have a lot of focus. Okay. Mm-hmm. We are going kind of topic.
No worries. You guys are fine. I really appreciate you guys both having just a very frank and forthright conversation, and it has been a pleasure. So, Liradel, that is all the questions that we have for you today. Thank you so much for being with us today, both Liradel and Malou. Obviously, as I mentioned before, you know, we're all in different time zones, so I really appreciate you guys making this work and both of you being here. Liradel, do you have any final thoughts or comments that you'd like to share with our audience before we wrap things up?
Well, keep dreaming. Right?
Yeah, nice.
Okay. Very nice. I like it. So,
and I have a final word.
Yeah.
I'd like to encourage every Retro Achievements fan to flood the Liradel user wall on the Retro Achievements page with showing their gratitude for the guy who implemented Chivos in RetroArch.
Yes, be sure to flood Mr. Liradel's wall and give him lots of praise and love. He is the guy, as you guys have learned over the course of this podcast.
Exactly.
So definitely give him a lot of love for that. So
thank you.
Yeah. To the people at home, thank you guys for listening to the RA podcast. So if you guys like today's episode, don't forget to like the video and hit the bell to be notified when our future episodes go live. Be sure to let us know in the comments what other guests that you guys would like to see on the RA podcast. Thank you so much for listening, everyone, and we'll see you guys next time.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for having me. Bye.